In 1871, the Commune of Paris launched 65 hot air balloons into the countryside to drop leaflets with a message on them. The message was, "Our interests are the same." And it was during this period, the Commune of Paris, it was a short period of time where there was sort of a utopia of harmony and equity throughout the land. And so it was out of this divine idea that they would launch these messages so more and more people would know that ultimately we are one, which is the underlying spiritual message to this secular message they sent out, "Our interests are the same." And so very much like the song we just sang, this has been our whole series about the significant impact that community makes, the absolute essential need for community, essentially, in our world. And so community has been marked by this, the words that we sang in the meditation as well, "More Together Than Alone," the title of the book by Mark Nepo that we used for our fall series and study. Today's the sixth week, the last week of our fall series. And I know our study groups have really, I've heard really great feedback about jumping into that together and the discussion questions around community and the significance of community, the impact of community, the importance on our individual lives. So that's where we've been these last 6 weeks, if you're just joining us, and today we're going to wrap up our series. One of the things that we've looked at around community, and I'll just bring back for reflection once again, is the idea that many of us have a harder time with community because we've fallen for that romanticized notion of the lone wolf or the rugged individualist. And so that lone wolf, you know, that we have often held up as this majestic ideal, I can go it alone, I can do it alone, I'm strong, I'm resilient, I'm capable, I've got everything I could possibly ever need. In reality, is actually not the truth. You know, a lone wolf in the wild is a wolf in distress. And it's pretty similar for us humans. Hate to break the news, but we're pack animals too. And so our desire to go it alone usually doesn't go very far before we realize that we are indeed, in essence, in truth, more together than alone. And we are also more. We can be more effective. We are more. We are better when we are together rather than alone. So it's this that we have been looking at throughout the last 6 weeks, and it feels especially timely in our world that we really look at the importance of community and how, where is our place in it, and how do we plug in further, or how do we attract more of that which buoys us up and allows us to be more effective in the world, more of service in the world, and also more filled up individually, because of those connections and the sense of the web of support that comes with community. So along the way, we've identified our centers of light, and many of us would consider unity right here one of our centers of light, one of the places where we come to get filled up and really recharge, if you will, our lights so we can go out into the world and radiate more effectively. So that's one of the many things we've talked about, and we'll revisit some of these ideas. And speaking of wolves, got me to think about Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who is the author of Women Who Run With the Wolves. Some of you may know that book. Came out quite a while ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago or something. Longer. People are saying longer. Okay. I should have even started to guess. Yeah, we're all dating ourselves, yes. So anyway, Clarissa Pinkola is a well-known spiritual teacher, author, Jungian analyst, and she tells this story about an old man who's basically on his deathbed, and he gathers his loved ones around him to impart some wisdom as he's going to be moving on. And so he gives a stick to each of his loved ones that is there, and he invites them each to break it. And one at a time, they each break the stick they hold with ease. And he says, "This is what it's like when the soul is alone." And then he has them bundle sticks together. And he says, "Break those." And they're all trying and trying individually and together. "You hold that, you hold that." And nobody can break the bundle of sticks. And he just smiles. And he says, "See, when we are together, we cannot be broken." And that truth resonates, doesn't it? when we recognize the truth, when we are together in the ways that we really dream about being together, then when we show up that way, that's what we attract. And that's the kind of support, the kind of love, the kind of compassion, the kind of ability to do together, co-create together, that we really want, that is symbolized in this very simple story. So we are indeed more together than alone. And that has been the chant, the mantra, the affirmation for our whole series. Let's say it together as we come together in this knowing that we really get this together. Together, together, together. Together. We are more together than alone. Yeah. See, when we say it now, it feels like there's a palpability to that. There's a sense of a real knowing of this as we've journeyed together in the ways that we have. Some of you have read the book. Some of you have been in a discussion group. Some of you have been here on some of the Sundays. Some of you, all of them. But in some way, we're touched by this idea of this message and reminded of the significance of it. And then when we speak it together, I can feel that difference even from way back when we spoke that together. So Mark Nepo, the author of our story, if you want to refer back to these ideas, the basic ideas are on page 40 of the book. I've changed them a bit, but it's the basic essence of six key ways that we can repair our world together. So we take that idea of more together than alone. How do we break it down? What does it look like for us to embody it, to make it practical, to really make it alive for us in our everyday lives? The first tenet, if you will, the first of these six ideas of how to repair our world together is to begin with living from the inside out. So it always comes back to this, doesn't it? That practice, a spiritual practice of grounding within ourselves, of returning to spirit in prayer and meditation and movement, whatever it is that works for you as your practice, that allows you to ground there first. So then everything else you do comes from that place, that your actions and your words are inspired from spirit rather than just made up from the mind, right? So that's always a grounding place, always kind of a first rule, if you will, of the spiritual life. You know, one of the things that I've learned to do is just these little nuances, but I realize that some mornings if I go and make a cup of tea first, then I might get distracted with something else, and then before you know it, I have very squeezed practice or maybe not time at all in the morning. So I don't do that anymore. It's like no tea, no nothing, straight to my space to do my yoga and meditation. And so when I do that, then I have that base for that foundation for the rest of my day. So it's like that landing place. That it also, for me, prioritizes. It says to myself and broadcast to spirit that this is my priority, first thing, first of the day, this is what matters to me. So going on the inside first then allows us to live the rest of our days out and have that founding. So that's just what works for me. I don't know what works for you, but whatever it is, find it and then do that. And that will help us really ground this idea of how do we repair our world together, or how do we heal, or how do we come to restore the wholeness that we already know in the absolute truth is there, right? In the absolute truth, everything is perfect. Our lives are perfect and whole. Our world is perfect and whole. There's nothing to fix, nothing broken here. You know, so that's the one lens that we look through, the single eye that Jesus talked about, the knowing that all is perfect and whole and well. Through the two eyes, through the human eyes, through the physical experience, we see some stuff that needs to be cleaned up a little bit, right? And so it is that we also, because we are both human and divine, we work in both of those realms. So holding that, if we live from the inside out, we hold that vision, that truth, that single-eyed knowing that all is perfect and whole and well and already healed. And then we get busy doing the things we need to do to restore to that vision, to that knowing, to that underlying truth. Does that make sense? Sort of? Yeah, so the second tenet is to know, to really feel and live and move about the world in the knowing that we are not separate. So we can't be separate from spirit. We can't be separate from our source. We know this in truth. We forget, and we sometimes have these times, these periods of aridity, the mystics would call it, those times where we have this, like we can't really feel it. It's like, oh, I don't really feel it. I don't feel that divine connection that I felt, you know, last year or the year before or yesterday or whatever it is. But that is always there. The connection cannot be broken. It's always there. Sometimes we're just more consciously attuned. So when we have that practice, it allows it to be available to us more. And so then knowing from that truth that we cannot be separate from anything, right? We can't be separate from each other. We can't be separate from any form of life because it's based in this truth of this oneness, this knowing. One of the things we can do is to really make this come alive, this idea of not being separate, is to see and to notice and to acknowledge one another at that deeper level. To know that nobody is put on your path by mistake. You know, so God sends, if you will, or God shows up as anybody who comes in our path at any moment in time, at any, you know, place, on BART, in traffic, you know, through this door, at your place of work, and you're knocking on your door at home. Those are all the messengers. If we could see it in that way, if we could welcome those who come into our path in such a way, what a different world, right? So that we won't see through our self-interest, through our own opportune ideas of who we need to talk to and what we need for ourselves, but instead just see, ah, look at this. The divine has brought me the divine. And so how will I then acknowledge and see and notice the divine who is right before me? Around the world, cultures all around the world have various ways that we greet one another. Of course, in the U.S. and other English-speaking nations, we say, how are you? It's really meant to be, how are you? You know, like we really care about the answer to that question. In our busyness, a lot of times, and in our roteness, we don't always stop to really listen to the answer to that. And because we know that the other person or other people are busy and they don't really want to hear about everything that's going on in our lives, we say, fine, everything's fine, you know. Quick answer. You want the long answer or the short answer? But in other cultures, they have other ways of saying it that sort of refreshes the whole idea behind it. In the Blackfoot tribe in Native America, you know, in Native American tradition, you know, the idea of all my relations. So out of this idea of all my relations that all Native American tribes hold is the Blackfoot tribe's way of greeting one another. And what they say to each other is, how are the connections? So when you hear, how are the connections? There's a lot of ways to think about, how are the connections? How is my connection with spirit? How is my connection with my family? How is my connection with my loved ones? How is my connection with the world? How is my connection with nature? You know, there are many ways to look at that. How is my connection to my body? How is my connection to my mind? So how are the connections? Try that next time you meet a friend on the path. How are the connections? The African Bushmen say, I see you. And then the other says, I am here. So it's a call and response. I see you. I am here. It's really sweet, isn't it? There's a real foundation of, I really see you. I really acknowledge you. I see the truth in you, even. It's like a namaste, which we would find in India and other Hindu countries. In China, there's a greeting, Ya Ayuni. Ya Ayuni, and it means, oh my eyes, you are here. Now I can see. Oh my eyes, you are here. Now I can see. This really drives home the more together than alone, doesn't it? Because I need you to see. Now I can see we're together. Now we can see in a holistic way, in an understanding way. So these are all ways that we can know this tenet that we are not separate. Simple ways, right? Simple things that we can do in our lives to just be aware of one another. Recently, I was in Civic Park. This third tenet is for the climate rally where a lot of young people were speaking. And this third tenet is about entering the smallest task wholeheartedly with the an awareness of the whole of life. So these young people that were speaking at this climate rally were really speaking from that place of small things we can do, everyday life things that we can do that have a great impact on the whole of life. So have you ever thought about the good you can do by occasionally taking a shower? Right, so there's the obvious one, right? But one of the young women had this idea, which I had not, just for whatever reasons, just had not thought about. She said that she's replaced all her shower gels and shampoos with bar soaps and bar shampoos, so that she's not throwing away all these plastic bottles. And so what a simple change to make, to go back to bar soaps and these kinds of things, you know? So if you're thinking, oh, but those are messy, we call that in our house bougie suffering. So we want to have an impact on the world, right? So we might have to, it may have to suffer a few small inconveniences in order to do so. But it's this kind of tenet that the small tasks, the smallest things that we do regularly, taking a shower, you know, or whatever else it is that you can think of that you do on a regular basis, it can have an impact on the whole of life. So to do those things with a wholehearted way, whether it's greeting one another, or it's taking a shower, or it's doing your dishes, or whatever it is that you think of. You know, speaking of showers, it made me think of another thing, which is to put a bucket in the shower, and then when you're done, go water your plants, right? That's been a suggestion for some time that I've done over time, but I've forgotten about. So here we are again, back at square one, doing those things that we know make a difference for the whole of life. The fourth tenet is to engage all sides, remembering that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. This is one that we talk about a lot, and I know this is a tough road to walk sometimes when we have really different opinions at the table. You know, I constantly am looking at this, even with family members, to like, how can we understand each other in a different way? Helen Keller maybe offers a clue here to really work at this understanding piece. She said, I do not want the peace that passeth all understanding. I want the understanding that bringeth peace. And so that became her really essence in claiming this, knowing that I will work for the understanding because I know that will bring peace. This is really where we are now on our spiritual journey together. We're not so much at that place anymore about, I want to be enlightened for the goodies of enlightenment. I want the bliss of enlightenment. We're so far past that now. We really are in a place where I want to be enlightened. I want to have understanding so I can serve the world with that understanding, so I can beam the light out into the world, so that I can help others awaken as well. We're really in the era of the bodhisattva in the Buddhist tradition, where we stay once we've, you know, kind of gotten a few things along the way that we understand, we stick around and we share those things. So let's not worry about enlightenment. It'll come or it won't come, you know. But we will have moments of it, right? We all have moments of it. We all have moments when the light bulb comes on. Share it. Don't just allow that to be the bliss of your moment, but share that, because that's the key. That's what's needed in our world. That's what will heal our world. To beam it out, to bring it forth, to walk with it, to be it, to embody it. That's really what we're about now. And that's what community does for us. It supports us in those efforts. It brings us together to call each other's gifts out. Like the many spoked wheel that Mark talked about, that the desert fathers saw a vision of a spoked wheel. And the spoked wheel was all the unique spokes are needed to make the whole wheel. That's what the community is the wheel. And all of you, all of us, are the spokes. And so we need our various backgrounds, our various perspectives, our various gifts in order for that wheel to really effectively work. And so we allow ourselves to share. So whether it is walking about the world and just sharing your light and your love and your greetings, or it is when you are together in a group, recognizing that whole is a wider light, like this, as we spoke of this as a center of light, a beacon of light. So we are here together, and there's a concentration of the light and the love that we have awakened to, the light and the love that we have done work to uncover in ourselves in various ways. And that is available to us now. And so it becomes exponentially available when we are associated with different community. So the tenet, one of the things about this piece too, about engaging all sides so that the whole, and remembering that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, that I really liked that Mark Nepo pointed out, is that it's not just about shared values, because a lot of times we've been talking in those terms, like where we come together in our shared values. But it's really deeper than that. It's our shared humanity. It's our shared divinity, really. And so shared values, he talks about, are sort of like customs. It's part of our culture that shapes shared values. But shared humanity shapes something deeper. Shared humanity, he talks about, is really the basis of community. So that's important for us to look beyond even the values to that oneness. Essentially, we're back to the idea of the oneness. The fifth tenet is to participate, not just to watch. So again, observation can be really important, but it's the putting ourselves in it. It's the action, it's the participation that's key, right? To be a participant in sharing what we've learned is really, really a key for us, to be a participant in carrying our gifts and our practices. Martina Wilsula is a Native American from Seattle. When she came of age, she was, as was the tribal custom, she was given a bundle, and she was told to walk with gentleness and kindness through the world, to remember to always walk with gentleness and kindness. Mark asks in one of the discussion questions from this last part, what is in your sacred bundle that helps you remember gentleness and kindness? So Brenly and I were talking about this morning, and we kind of came up with a few things that we as a couple bring as in our sacred bundle. So there are things that might reflect practices or ways that are important to you that help you remember to be gentle and kind. One of the things that we recalled and thought we could put in as a symbol is a shell that would symbolize the practice of self-identity, Ho'oponopono. Another is a talking stick that would symbolize the practice of counsel that helps us stay kind and gentle. Another is a CD of Sanatam Kaur, who we play a lot in our home, and it's just sacred chants. And so that helps us stay kind and gentle and resonant with that vibration. And then the last thing was a spider catcher that helps us stay kind and gentle and let those little creatures out and bless them. So I don't know what's in your sacred bundle, but I want to encourage you to reflect upon that. You know, what is it that you would carry if you were to bundle up a few altar items that would really reflect what is essential to you to remember how to be kind and gentle in the world? So they call that in South America a mesa. It's like a traveling altar. And so what? Name a few things. You know, you can think of them now or maybe reflect this week and journal or sit in meditation for a few moments and think, what would it be if I had, you know, two or three or four objects that I would put in my sacred bundle and they would just remind me to walk through the world with gentleness and kindness. And then the last of the tenets is to bear witness to how things come together with the same kind of focus and urgency that we bear witness to how things fall apart. Because you know our world and our culture loves to show us a zillion different ways of how things are falling apart, right? And so it's important as people on the spiritual path that we really see through that and focus on the ways that things come together. And to really pay attention to that with the same kind of urgency will help keep us trained on what it is that we want to create together, what it is that we are moving toward together, rather than focusing on what doesn't work, what comes apart. So we are more together in truth than we are falling apart. We are more coming together. We are more putting together. We are more healing and repairing and restoring and making wholeness than we are dividing and separating, even though there seems to be a lot of that emphasis in the world. So keeping our eyes and our hearts trained on that. So in all these 6 weeks, we've traveled through a lot of different ideas and concepts and practices and principles and things to grab hold of all around community. So I want to kind of just give you a little bit of a reflection and a memory through the affirmations that we've been through and the ideas that we have looked at. In our first week, we realized that we are they, you know, the infamous they. That we actually are they, the experts, the theys, that, you know, in the ways that we use that term. So we are they because we are one. And that's where we really landed in our first week. In our second week, we were looking at community through our new Unity of Walnut Creek core values, the love and wisdom, connection and service. And where we wrapped that all together is recognizing that I am a spiritual citizen, not just of the world, but for the world. That we are really walking and carrying those values, kind of like a sacred bundle of spiritual qualities, and that's where we land as a tribe here at Unity. The third week, we named and claimed and recommitted to our centers of light. And we decided that we would engage and brighten those centers of light. So as we identify them, those places that really light you up, that really help you to release the divine light and love in you, Unity, I'm imagining, is one of them for all of us, but there may be others in your life, other places that are pillars for you and centers of light. So to recognize those and then to say, I'm going to engage and brighten my center of light because my center of light gives to me. The fourth week, we visited the Tower of Babel, the biblical story, and also a similar story in Iran. And it was to remember that people are more important than bricks. And that, you know, if you are building something together, you have to lay the bonding first before you put the brick down. And so the bonding with one another is essential in order to build with one another. So really getting at that foundational idea and then affirmed together that I am a bonder and a builder of spirit. Do you want to say that one together? I am a bonder and builder of spirit. Because that is the truth, isn't it? And last week, we started looking at the ways that we meet adversity in our lives, that there are general human impulses of ways we look. We either fight or flee, or we sort of roll over and comply, even when the policies or the rules don't feel resonant for the greater good. And so we looked at our tendencies and how we could turn those around a little bit. So if we are someone that tends to lash out and to fight back, that we could harness that passion for good and do something that we really want to be offering. And if we tend to flee, if we tend to distance and separate, that we could turn that around and have the courage to be the one who reaches our hand across or hugs or forgives or whatever it is to make reparations. So we really looked at how we can turn around adversity into unity, how we can meet adversity and move through it into unity. You want to say that one together? I meet adversity with unity. Yeah. So, and today, you know, we're back to the overall theme of the whole picture. And also, you know, I want to fill in that story that I started with a little bit. 150 years, this commune of Paris, you know, when they floated those 65 hot air balloons, they didn't have a way to control them and the navigation. So even though their intention was they just go out into the countryside around Paris, into other places in France, they went everywhere. They went into neighboring countries. A lot of it fell over Belgium and Germany and other places. They went into the sea. They went across enemy lines. And so if you imagine all of a sudden you're walking around and these balloons are dropping these messages and you start to, you know, pick up, you know, it's like from God, right? Out of the sky, here comes this message. Our interests are the same. Imagine if we, because we as a prayerful community can broadcast that kind of message, right? Everywhere into the world. If people awaken to the idea everywhere that our interests are the same, they automatically awaken then also to a greater truth that we are more together than alone. And as we begin to realize we're more together than alone, we return to the very basic spiritual truth underlying it all, that we are one. And so I want to invite us to say this together and then to put it out there in a whole new way. So first, let's say it one time together. Our interests are the same. And now let's think about the fact that, reflect upon the fact, bring it into our hearts, that we are now broadcasting this together, and it can be heard all around the world. When we say this together the next time, it will be heard in Washington, D.C. It will be heard on Wall Street. This will be heard in all the major cities and the corners of our country and beyond. It'll be heard across the oceans. It'll be heard in war-torn countries. It'll be heard in places like Syria and Yemen. It'll be heard in Russia and Iran. It'll be heard in places where there are schisms between countries and tribes. It'll be heard in China and Tibet, in Palestine and Israel, in North and South Korea, and everywhere else you can imagine. It will be heard in places like where there are spiritual centers in the world, like Bali and India, Assisi, Italy, and Peru, and other places like that, and anywhere that you imagine. And so as we gather up our energies, as we feel this knowing that as we speak this together, we broadcast it and it gets received from heart to heart, from mind to mind. So let's really speak it. Let's really claim it and know it and send it out and let everyone in the world be reminded that our interests are the same. Together? Our interests are the same. They heard us. Amen. Thank you.